My relationship with Robertson started really in 1982. It was almost 5 years after I started working in the library. In that period, the Rebbe and the Robertson started coming here to stay here for Shabbos in several rooms as an apartment for the Rebbe and the Robertson for all the Shabbosim. It's in that period that the Rebbe, it was hard for him to walk home every Shabbos and come back and walk again and come back. It was too hard for him to this walk. Till in the weekdays, the secretaries would take him by car. But Shabbos, he would walk, and in that year, it became obvious that it's hard for him. So therefore, this day, we devoted several rooms in the library for the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin to be able to stay there at Shabbos. Obviously, all rooms was full with Sforim. So we took one room that was surrounded with bookcases, and this became the dining room. A second room that was surrounded with bookcases became the bedroom. A little room on the side became the kitchen, and my office became the living room. It didn't really look like a living room, so they purchased a three-piece couch to put it there, and it should look at least like a living room. So I used to walk there a whole week till Friday afternoon, when I cleaned out the whole room from everything that is in my work. And then came in Menachem Yunik, a bocher that was helping to prepare the apartment for the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin every Friday. He set everything, it should look at least like a living room. And that's how it was for several years. That's when I really got to know the Rebbetzin. And on several occasions, when I had questions that I was not comfortable to ask the Rebbe, and I needed to know for the work of editing this forum, I felt that I shall speak to her and ask her. It was in 1983 when I was working on editing the fifth volume of the Friedrich Rebbe's letters. In the introduction, I had to explain that period. It was the period of the beginning of the Second World War. It was the year of 1941, including the rescue of the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin of France. I looked in the documents. I saw in the beginning of the year they was in Paris. Then I see that they are in Vichy. Then I see they are in Nice. Then I see that the papers for him to be able to come in the United States are being sent to Marseille. And then I see that he is stuck in Portugal. And I didn't really get the story in order to explain the letters. I knew the Rebbe is not comfortable to be asked about his personal life. I knew the Rebbetzin is even more than that, not comfortable to speak about her personal life. They would never do it. But I knew that I have to know. So I thought I'll try. So I told Menachem Yunik that when the Rebbetzin comes in, he should tell her that I want to ask her something, if I could come in to discuss with her. The time for it was right in the beginning of Shabbos. I was trying it should be in a period when the Rebbe is not there. The Rebbe would come in every Friday before the Shabbos starts. He would come into the library, be in the library, till after the Rebbetzin lights the Shabbos candles. Then he would go back to the office and stay there till after davening, after Ma'ariv. After Ma'ariv, he would come for making Kiddush and the Suda. So that hour in between, I knew the Rebbe is not there. So I told Menachem Yunik he should tell the Rebbetzin that I would like to discuss with her. I felt she agreed, and I came in, and I asked her, and I was ready to say, "What? Don't ask me these questions," because she was so usually in herself and not outgoing with people speaking, and especially not about herself, and especially not about her past. But I told her, "Look, the Rebbe gave me a task, and I'm editing now the letters of 1941. And the Rebbe always tells me I should write an introduction to explain the error. And I'm confused here. So could you try to explain me what happened then?" She heard my question and she thought for a while, and then she sat down and started telling me the whole story. And I was very surprised. So she tells me, in that days in Paris, it was for a young man to walk on the street was dangerous because they could just grab him and take him away to the war, to fight in the war, Second World War. So the Rebbe went to the army to sign up for the army, that he is ready to go to the army. And he got a certificate that he is a registered recruit. With this certificate, it was easy for him to walk on the street. If a police stops him and says, "Where are your papers?" he shows that he is a recruit. Then the Nazis occupied Paris, most of France, and it was obvious that they had to flee. So the first place to flee was to Vichy. But the train station was packed and was not even able to find a place on the train. But since he had that paper of that he is a recruit soldier, so that made much easier for him to go and say that he needs now to go there, and we should get him right away a ticket on the train for him and for the Rebbetzin, and that helped. So he went on the plane, on the train. It was a day before Shavuos, the eve of Shavuos. And they arrived to Vichy. It was already, the Rebbetzin tells me, when Shavuos came in by sunset. So she tells me, so we took all the suitcases of the important documents that the Rebbe took with him. We put it up on a wagon with a horse. I went on the wagon because I couldn't walk myself, but the Rebbe wouldn't go on the wagon because it's already after sunset. So the horse and the wagon with the balagola went all the way. I was sitting on the wagon with all the suitcases, and the Rebbe was walking along us. It was then a period that there was no question. Everyone tried to save himself, his life, even on Shabbos, even on Shavuos. But after the Rebbe arrived to Vichy, he didn't want to. Then the Rebbetzin tells me that there was also in Paris the Rov Reb Zalman Schneerson, is a second cousin, and he with the family also tried to get to Vichy. They couldn't make it on that day. They finally got a place on the next day, and they arrived in middle of the Shavuos also to Vichy. Then the Rebbetzin tells me that they stayed in Vichy for several months. But it was harder and somewhat danger that maybe it will also be occupied by the Nazis or other reasons it wasn't so safe. It was much safer in Nice, which was then under the occupation of the Italian government. And for some reason, it was more safe. So they moved in the end of the summer of 1941 from Vichy to Nice. So they stayed there in Vichy for another several months, but at the end, in the end of summer 40, they moved from there to Nice. They thought they will get the papers to Nice to come to the United States right away, but it was much longer than they anticipated. The Friedrich Rebbe here, the father of the Rebbetzin, was doing all he could to try to get the permission for him to come to the United States. And he didn't, for some reason, it wasn't safe to write or send telegrams directly to the Rebbe. So there was a person in Nice by the name Berl Abram, and all the documents was written, the telegrams and instructions was written to him. I asked the Rebbetzin if she remembers anything about someone by the name Abram. She told me she didn't remember. It was probably an acquaintance of the Rebbe himself that it was he was the intermediate writing telegrams between the Rebbe and the Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe. Obviously, it was hard, and they wasn't so easy in the embassy there, in Nice, to help with the receiving the documents. In a certain date, the Rebbe decided that he doesn't find enough cooperation. So he decided, and he sent a telegram through Abram to the Friedrich Rebbe, please send the papers for me from now on to Marseille instead of Nice. The Friedrich Rebbe thought maybe the Rebbe moved to Nice, to Marseille from Nice. So he sent a telegram to Mr. Abram, please let me know if the Rebbe is still in Nice or he moved, and why did he write to me that the papers should be sent to Marseille. But actually, since the middle of the winter, then all the papers was sent to Marseille, and finally the embassy of Marseille helped. And in the end of the winter, to be correct, he received the papers in the end of Pesach of 1941, that he will be accepted into the United States. So the Rebbetzin tells me Pesach came and there is no matzahs in Nice or any ability to bake matzahs for Pesach. So the Rebbetzin tells me that the Rebbe had a friend called Bezbrodke. He was an expert on mirrors, and he was working, preparing the mirrors for the submarines of the Army of France. And for that cause, he would travel sometimes to other countries nearby. So on the end of the winter, he was traveling to Switzerland. So the Rebbe went with him to the port, and then he told him, try to find out if there in Switzerland is possible to receive somewhere matzahs for Pesach. And when he came back before Pesach, he brought some matzahs with him that the Rebbe had for Pesach. It was very interesting that after I found out the whole story about Bezbrodke, that he was in connection with the Rebbe, I let your office to know about it, and that led finally to an interview with Bezbrodke telling about his relationship with the Rebbe. The Rebbe received the papers in the end of Pesach, and he thought it's already the end of it, but then came up new difficulties because there was no ship that goes from France to the States, only from Portugal. So he had to get a transit visa in Portugal. They didn't want to give it to him. So there was efforts of the Friedrich Rebbe. He knew that the Rov of Lakewood, Reb Nissen Wachsman, that was in close relationship with the Friedrich Rebbe, his brother-in-law has a connection there, and he would be able to arranged that, so he wrote to him the whole story, and finally the brother-in-law got the transit visas. The Rebbe left after Pesach Paris friends from Nice, he went to Portugal, he stayed there for a while, he went on the ship, and finally he arrived here on the 28th day of Sivan. That was a great joy and a new era in the history of Lubavitch. And that day, the Friedrich Rebbe wrote a letter to a great Rav, Rabbi David Meir Rabinowitz, which is his son was a lawyer. And this lawyer was working all the time in Washington to get the special papers and the special permission for the Rebbe to come there. So he, after he succeeded, the day the Rebbe came, the Friedrich Rebbe wrote to Radam, Rabbi David Meir Rabinowitz, the big psura, that finally he arrived here and then started the new era for the history of Lubavitch. It finished the journey that the Rebbe started over a year ago, at the eve of Shavuos, 13 months earlier, when he fled from Paris to Vichy, and then from Vichy to Nice, and then receiving the papers in Marseille, and then getting the transit visa and getting into Portugal, and from Portugal finally arrived here to the United States on the 28th day of Sivan.
The conversation that you had with the Rebbe was in the library?
It was on my desk. She was sitting there as sitting and relaxing in the living room, which till a few hours earlier was my the office. But she was sitting and I came in and I was standing and I was telling her, and then she told me the whole story. That was I was so surprised that she was ready to speak about herself, speak about her history, and that the whole story I wrote in the introduction. Obviously, I didn't want to write an introduction that this is what she told me. Probably she wouldn't be comfortable to do that. So I just wrote facts. And whoever asked me, how do you know all these facts, I would tell them that the Rebbetzin told me the whole story. The whole idea that the library becomes the apartment of the Friedrich Rebbe made us somewhat difficult in our work and also uncomfortable for the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin in our understanding. I have mentioned before that the dining room was surrounded with bookcases. That's okay. I mentioned before that my office became a living room with the couch. The two pieces of the couch are till today standing in my office, just a good memory of that nice period. But the bedroom, that they also had to put in two beds in and a dresser into a room surrounded with bookcases, we understood the Rebbe is not comfortable and just doesn't have a choice. But even more than that, we are, as workers in the library, supposed to come in all the time and take books and put in books. And how uncomfortable are we when we have to go in and see the Rebbe's bed and the Rebbetzin's bed and go take the book and again and again. So on one occasion we decided then that we shall rebuild it. On the second floor we should rebuild a room for all these bookcases, dismantle these bookcases and reinstall them on the second floor, and fix up this room. It should become only a bedroom. We knew that if we discuss it with the Rebbe or the Rebbetzin, they'll say, no way, don't do anything. We have no choice. We have to sleep here, but we don't want any changes in the library. We understood that. But as long as they didn't tell us not to do it, so we felt we have to do it for ourselves and for the Rebbe. So on 1 week, the contractor was ready with all the material. Sunday morning, after the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin left the library, all the books were taken out of the bookcases. All the bookcases was dismantled, taken out piece by piece to the second floor, reinstalled there. All the books was put back into that bookcases on the second floor. The first floor, the bedroom, completely remolished, completely rebuilt, and working every day from the morning till the evening, that on Friday everything should be perfect, like it was built lahatchila for a bedroom. We didn't know the reaction. The Rebbetzin comes in an hour before Shabbos. She sees it, she doesn't say a thing. The Rebbe comes in a few minutes before Shabbos, when the Rebbetzin has to light candles. The Rebbetzin is lighting candles, and the Rebbe sees what happened. I was very upset. He told the Rebbetzin, I don't like it. They didn't have to do it. We can manage like this. They didn't have to build it for us. And he tells that to her, and he goes back to the office, as I mentioned before, that after lighting Shabbos candles, he goes back to the room. The Rebbetzin tells Menachem Yunick, that he's there to help, please go to Levin's house and tell him I want to see him right now. My wife is lighting the Shabbos candles, I'm still in the house, and somebody is knocking on the door. I come out, he tells me the Rebbetzin wants to see you right now. I understood what it's all about. I went right away, I come in. Why did he have to do it for us? We can manage. We didn't want the whole library should have to rebuild just for us. You didn't have to do it. I say, Rebbetzin, you're right. But we didn't do it for you. We couldn't walk. Imagine yourself, every hour I have to go in, take books and return books, and I see the beds, and it's always locked, and I don't permit any other librarian to come in here because it's not comfortable. They should come in to see your bedroom, and I have to do it all myself, and it's not comfortable for us. I did it for us, we did it. So she says, if you did it for yourself. But the Rebbe still didn't accept it, and when he came back to the office, he wrote a comment to the Rabbi Krinsky, who was in charge of the building, and he was doing the hiring for the contractor, that I'm very upset. Rabbi Krinsky shows me the comment of the Rebbe, and he tells me, try your best to say that it's for the library, because I'm not the one to discuss what the library needs. So when Rabbi Krinsky showed me that comment of the Rebbe, I wrote in to the Rebbe that I saw the comment of the Rebbe, but I want to explain to the Rebbe that we need it for ourselves too. And they still, we need more construction to be done for the library itself. So the Rebbe answered me, if that's the case, then it's okay. It showed somewhat that he was still skeptical, that we still did it for him and he didn't like it, because the Rebbe always, he wanted to manage with the list. He didn't want people really to work to make it more comfortable. So he was so upset that we had to prepare this comfortable bedroom. It was on another occasion when I spoke to the Rebbetzin on the telephone when I needed to know something about the introduction or a letter of the Rebbe. That was someone came into the library and brought a copy of the original letter the Rebbe wrote to the Ragatchov Ergoin. It was in 1925. The Rebbe still lived then in Dnepropetrovsk, Yekaterinoslav. And we saw right away it's the handwriting of the Rebbe. It was found in the archive of the Ragatchov Ergoin. But on the end of the letter, it's a halacha letter, the Rebbe is asking him some questions and explaining his opinion about some subject in halacha. And then he signs by the end, M. Guraria. It was in 1925, and Rebbe still lived in near Petrovsk. He wasn't married yet to the Rebbetzin, but he was Danachosen. And I didn't know why he used the Kurarian name. And I thought maybe for some reason he used the name for other things also. I wasn't sure, but I thought maybe the Rebbetzin would know, even though she wasn't married, but she was Danakale. And maybe she would know if the Rebbe ever used the name of Gurari in the period of Rashi, maybe for any reason. So I called her up and I just told her the story of the letter. And I asked her if she knows. So she tells me, I never heard, so I don't know. But I can ask him. Wait, I'll call you back and I'll ask him. I was then shocked. I didn't mean you should call the Rebbe and ask him. I just asked if you remember he should use the name. That's it. So she tells me, it doesn't matter. And 50 minutes later, she calls me back. And she tells me, I called the Rebbe, which means he was in the office and she was home. And she called him in the office just to tell him what I asked. I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. Then she tells me, the Rebbe answered me that he couldn't remember the details. So he says, why don't you please show him the letter and maybe he'll remember. So that's what I did. And I wrote it to the Rebbe and I asked him if he wrote this name just for avoiding the censor, if they will see a letter that is being sent from Schneerson, they'll just stop. So they wrote Gurari. In Dnepropetrovsk then lived a Lubavitcher Hasid by the name Mordechai Gurari. He then, later he drowned, and his son is now the Rov in Chevrashas and Kingston. So since he didn't want to write a letter with the name of Schneerson, he wrote a letter of signing Gurari. So I asked if that's the reason or any other reason, and the Rebbe okayed that the reason was for the censor, he didn't want to write the name of Schneerson. But since already the Rebbe told me I should show him the letter and ask him, so I took my guts and I asked him, since the Rebbe wrote to the Ragachover, probably the Ragachover answered to the Rebbe, does the Rebbe have the letters of Ragachover or other letters that the Rebbe wrote to the Ragachover that I would incorporate? And the Rebbe answers me, Lachapis Ba'archion, to be checked in the archive. I didn't really know what it means. If he means the archives in the library, obviously I checked and there is nothing there. If he means the archive in his house, what is he telling me that to look there? But probably it meant that it was in his house, but he didn't have the time to look for it. And he says, when I have the time, I'll look for it. We didn't get it then, but after Gimel Tammuz in the house, in the archives, was found several postcards and letters from the Ragachover to the Rebbe, and they are now all published in the Rashimes, and also the letters of the Rebbe to the Ragachover are published in the Igros Kodesh.
What year was this?
This was in 1987. That's when I started working on the Rebbe's letters. Because when I edited the letters of all the Rabbeim, the Igros Kodesh, I thought that I'm going to finish at the letters of the Friedrich Rebbe. But the letters of the Rebbe, I didn't think I will be working on it, since earlier already, they started publishing the Rebbe's letters as a addendum, as a hisofe, to the set of Likutei Sichas. So I felt since they printed there, it shouldn't be printed separately. So I thought that I'm going to finish by the Friedrich Rebbe's letters. But the minute I finished the Friedrich Rebbe's letters, the Rebbe gave me a package of letters of himself, and he asked me if I could start preparing these letters. And then he told me he'll bring me more, and he told the secretaries to look for all the archives. And finally, I started working on these letters too. After I finished the first volume, that was in spring of 1987. After I finished the first volume in the summer, in that summer, someone came in with this letter. So that's when I asked, and that's when he answered. It was published then in the Sefer Siyumi HaRambam, and later when we got back to print the letters of the Rebbe of that period, it was incorporated in the set of Igros Kodesh. It was after the Istalkus of the Rebbetzin, so the name was written Chaim Ushke, and that's how everyone pronounced it. And I have had then some doubts on it, because usually in the family and close friends, her name was always Musya. They didn't call her Chaim Ushke. The place that we see Chaim Ushke is mainly in writing, where the Rebbe Rashab writes her name, he writes Chaim Ushke, and when the Friedrich Rebbe writes her name, it's Chaim Ushke. But when she was called by friends, or when she signed her name, was always Musya. Wasn't Chaya, and wasn't Mushke. So then, I had a feeling that the way people pronounce the name Chaya Mushke is not correct. I felt that since everyone calls her Musya, so when they wanted to call her in a name like a Kiddush name, they would call her Muske. Just like Rivke would become Rivki, Sore would become Sorke. It's a like you call a child. So I felt that everyone pronounces the name not correct. It's not Mushke, it's Muske. Because her name is Musya, and when you call her like when she was a child, probably she was a Muske. So I wrote about it to the Rebbe. I don't remember the occasion, but I wrote about it to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe didn't accept it. So he writes me, what you write, that everyone called her only Musya, and no one in the family called her Chaim Ushke. So I did hear the name Chaim Ushke, which means to say that the Friedrich Rebbe called her by the full name. And the fact that you say that Muske, it's a Muske, not Mushke. Muske is like a called a child. That's not Bukovedik. Her name was Mushke, not a child. It's a Bukovedik way. So then he answered that the real name is Chaya Mushke, and that's how it ended. You know that from so many girls.